For fiscal cliff tax hikes, just how rich is rich? From APM, I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. It is December 18th. The fiscal cliff developments were flying around as our show unfolded this morning. We'll get you the latest. We'll also talk about officials wrangling with a particular type of home business in the home of country music. And we'll discuss the news this morning that you can probably now get a Big Mac on Christmas Day if you want to, but be sure to spare a kind word for that person behind the counter.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/the Big Book.
This morning, Republican House Speaker John Boehner delivered a critical bit of news. He said one of the GOP's most important proposals can wait until next year. Republicans have been arguing that raising the age for Medicare eligibility might be essential to any fiscal cliff deal. That, it appears, is now put off for another day. Boehner said Americans have suffered enough stress from events in recent days. That leaves negotiators largely still wrangling over taxes. Republicans proposed letting taxes rise on those making more than $1 million a year. President Obama has countered now with an offer to set the income level at $400,000. Marketplace's Queena Kim has our latest look at this moving goalpost.
During the election, President Obama defined a rich household as one making $250,000 a year. But now, at $400,000?
In a sense, the president is redefining what's rich. And it goes back to rich, to an economist, is wealth.
Chris Lowe is a chief economist at FTN Financial. By wealth, Lowe means how many assets you have. But in politics these days, wealth has been defined by income, and that can get complicated.
It's kind of like this. If you're living in Peoria making $200,000 a year, chances are you're a senior executive in one of the manufacturing companies there, and you're doing really well.
And if you live in New York, Chicago, or San Francisco?
Chances are you're a professional, you're a doctor, you might be a lawyer. The cost of living is higher. With a couple of kids, it's a struggle.
Lowe says there are not a lot of people who make $400,000 a year. But if you do, Lowe says most people would agree you're rich. I'm Queena Kim for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Inklings of fiscal cliff progress, likely a good part of what we've been seeing all morning long. The markets are going up, and so at this moment, the Dow is up about 0.6%, the S&P 500 about the same, and the NASDAQ has topped 1% higher for the day. In corporate news, the private equity group Cerberus Capital Management says today it is selling its investment in the gun manufacturer Freedom Group. The company makes the Bushmaster rifle, one of the guns used in last week's attack. The two largest pension funds in the country, both in California, are considering stripping their portfolios of any investments in gun makers. Most gun makers are privately held, but one public company is Smith & Wesson. After falling Friday and again yesterday, those shares are down another 9% so far today. McDonald's is telling franchisees to open this year on Christmas Day. That comes from an internal memo leaked to Advertising Age magazine. Turns out deciding to open on Thanksgiving this year gave a nice boost to McDonald's sales, and they would love a repeat performance. My regular Tuesday guest is Julie Neiman. She's an analyst with Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. Hi, Julie.
Morning, Jeff.
This looks like McDonald's doing what many other retailers are doing more generally, trying to wring as much from holiday consumers and from employees as they possibly can.
Well, that's it exactly. Retailers are always out to extract as many of your dollars as possible. Now, the Thanksgiving taboo was broken by even bigger doorbusters. Stores stayed open later and longer, and it worked. The specials really did increase the sales growth. And now Christmas, which is the last taboo, is being broken. All the retailers and McDonald's, presently holidays are presented as work opportunity days. Mm. Well, welcome to the office. The trend started there with soft holidays like President's Day. Those were presented as work opportunity days, but it's all about productivity. Do it more, do it better, do it for less cost. How much can you do? Well, for most places, Christmas is the only day left. That's the only source of productivity, and that's probably pretty close to an end.
I know you've been keeping an eye on retail inventories, and just quickly, in terms of stocking up for the holiday rush, does it look like stores have got it about right?
Well, they've got both. Online and bricks and mortar becoming even more promotional, and this will be a big bang weekend. I do windshield surveys. I check out parking lots, shopping carts, walk through the stores. There may be a lot of promotions, but the inventories are really lean. Christmas decorations are gone. Winter wear, glamour wear, that's looking a little thin. Even electronics are pretty sparse here. So how do you get with all those Christmas gift cards? You thought you're going to clean up after Christmas sales?
Mm-hmm.
Not so much. You're going to have a new, fresh, full-priced inventory waiting your attracting dollars.
Julie Niemann is an analyst with Smith Moore & Company with me from St. Louis. Thanks, Julie.
You bet.
If parts of the U.S. economy are still stuck in the mud, you might think of the auto industry like a big old Ford, Chevy, or Dodge pickup truck with a tow cable. U.S. car makers are headed for a record year, led by sales right here at home, and they are dragging the broader economy right along with them. Our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon, drives it home.
This time, the hype might just be true.
There's never been a better time to buy than right now.
There has never been a better time to buy.
There has never been a better time to buy a new vehicle than right now.
Never before have global sales topped 80 million vehicles, but they're on track to reach that mark despite Europe's soft economy. Toyota has rebounded so strongly it could take back the crown from General Motors as world's biggest automaker, but GM and other car makers have enjoyed a third straight year of solid gains too.
Quite honestly, the year has exceeded everybody's expectations.
George Magliano is chief economist for IHS Automotive Research. One reason for the strong demand, there's never been a better selection, says analyst Jesse Toprak at TrueCar.com.
In terms of styling, safety, the integration of technology, whenever there is a great product, it compels people to buy.
Pent-up demand doesn't hurt either. Edmunds analyst Michelle Krebs expects that to keep sales strong well into the future.
The average age of the vehicle on the road remains over a decade, so we see at least a couple more years.
Barring, she says, some kind of fiscal cliff up ahead. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
A charity for the homeless in Sweden is taking a little heat for giving out heaters, by which I mean cigarettes. You remember that term? The charity that translates into English as Care Christmas has put together Christmas packages for the homeless for 17 years, and along with clothes and chocolates, they have always included a pack of smokes. Now, according to the Swedish news site The Local, a lobby group of Swedish dentists says it's time to stop the practice. The charity is not backing down, pointing out that no donors have complained, and the recipients deserve to get what they want around the holidays.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
People in Connecticut are trying to get back to business after Friday's tragic shooting in Newtown. And trying to get on with life won't be easy. So people like Jeff Gorter have flown in to help. Gorter's a counselor for the Crisis Care Network. And earlier today from Connecticut, he talked to my Morning Report colleague, Jeremy Hobson. Here's Jeremy.
Well, so what have you been brought in to do, Jeff?
Well, our company is particularly working with one organization that has a large number of employees in the area, specifically 150 of them that live in the Newtown area. And so, as you might guess, almost everybody knows somebody who was involved in this tragedy.
Well, so what can you do for them? How do you help them through this? And I guess you're brought into their workplace, so how do you help them get back to work?
Well, exactly. Our specific focus is that basically taking care of your people is also taking care of your business. And that we recognize in situations like this, you know, employees are going to be distraught. Getting back to work feels like normal, feels like something predictable.
Do you advise people that you deal with to follow the news and read everything they can about it or talk to people about it? Or do you advise them to avoid looking at the news about this tragedy?
You know, I think that that's a key point. You really want to limit your exposure to media at a time like this. It's very understandable to want as much information as you can because we're desperately trying to find some why here. But watching the same images over and over again only tends to create further anxiety for people as opposed to helping them re-engage in things that are more supportive and encouraging.
Now, you've dealt with 9/11 victims, Katrina, the tsunami in Japan. How does the challenge compare this time for you?
I think what has stood out for this particular response, of course, is the fact that there were children involved. And I think that takes all of the experiences and all of the reactions that people understandably have and just exponentially increases it. The survivor guilt that so many other parents are experiencing, that could have been my child, why wasn't it my child? It triggers everybody's protective instinct, and they want to do something, and yet there's no immediate focal point for that anger.
Jeff Gorder is a counselor from the Crisis Care Network. Jeff, thanks a lot, and good luck there in Newtown.
Thank you very much.
Can you imagine tweeting 911? That's the essence of a new idea for emergency response in the UK. The London Fire Brigade is debating whether to let people report emergencies via social media. Here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
On the face of it, it sounds crazy. Your house is on fire, and rather than phoning the emergency services, you tweet them. But that's what the London Fire Brigade is mulling over. They have to at least consider this, says Glenn Seabright, spokesman for the brigade, because so many Londoners own smartphones and use social media.
In effect, it would be irresponsible of us not to look at how we might need to respond to incidents that are reported by members of the public using Twitter or using other forms of social media.
He says many questions will have to be answered. Will the public trust Twitter to convey such a vital message as "my house is on fire"? But supporters of the new approach point to history, when Britain's emergency phone services were set up in 1935. Many people said it would never work. Now they handle 30 million emergency calls a year. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Across the country, cities are grappling with a big change in how we work. Home businesses can sometimes run afoul of local ordinances that were designed for another time. In Nashville, Tennessee, known as Music City, the dispute takes on a particular local flavor. Officials are reckoning with what to do about all the home recording studios. From WPLN in Nashville, here's Blake Farmer.
Here, you can't throw a rock without hitting a basement studio or backyard recording space.
My studio, where the magic happens.
Nomad Ovunk records pop, folk music, and even film scores. But anytime a guitarist lays down a lick, Ovunk is violating the law. There's a blanket ban on home-based businesses serving patrons on site. Codes officials generally look the other way, but one studio owner received a citation in recent weeks. So this month, the city council is considering an exemption for music makers, allowing them to have up to 10 visitors a day. Ovunk says he's ready to come out of the woods.
Legislation is going to help the neighbor who is scared, because now you're going to have a legal framework that you can go and complain.
Restrictions against the home office are falling across the country. In California, the state legislature just made it so people could sell everything from organic cupcakes to homemade jam from their own kitchen. More than half of all businesses in the U.S. are based near a bedroom, according to census figures. Jeff Cornwall heads the entrepreneurship program at Belmont University. He says some rules have outlived their usefulness, implemented before the internet age.
Most of them were more customer-focused businesses in those days. People were concerned about someone starting a daycare. I think there was an overreaction.
There are still fears of increased traffic and parking headaches, or just losing a neighborhood's residential character. In Nashville, the loudest worries are from musicians, concerned about the proposal's particulars. Bassist Dave Pomeroy heads the local musicians' union and spoke up at a public hearing.
To impose arbitrary standards of size, percentage of property, and number of people allowed will be a nightmare to enforce.
Tough task or not, most agree something needs to change. A ban on home studios in Music City just sounds bad. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
Wrapping things up here, so to speak, it's pretty much a holiday ritual to bash the fruitcake. And if you've ever had a go at one of those shrink-wrapped, store-bought things, I think you probably know what I'm talking about. But evidently, we haters of the fruitcake have never had one made by the monks of Assumption Abbey in Ava, Missouri. Every year at their abbey in the Ozarks, the monks make 25,000 fruitcakes, maintaining the very highest standards of both fruit and cake, I guess. And before each one of these $31 two-pound fruitcakes ships out, the monks say a prayer over it. Those who have had a taste of one of these things say they are indeed truly divine. And that'll do it for today's Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world
world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.